This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 11th of May 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week we're asking, who still writes letters? We've been inspired over the past few weeks here on Culture by letters, whether it's long-lost messages in bottles that we explored in episode 181, or the neatly handwritten note from Edinburgh that sparked our interest in fanzines recently. In a world where messages come so instantly, receiving a letter that someone has pored over before pulling on their boots and braving the elements to pop it in a pillar box has become a rather romantic idea. The show is dedicated to all you biro suckers out there. Or maybe it's a fountain pen. Get you. After all, other than in a letter, where else would you get this?
The remark by Alex Salmond, the Scottish nationalist leader, who said that the Scottish lion has roared. And this reader from Bolton in Lancashire says, I'm more than happy for the Scottish lion to roar as much as it wants, as long as it pays for its own cat food.
That sort of thing and more, right here on Culture, with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. We're going to start the show with a look at letters to the editor. This is the part of a newspaper in which the reader's voices are heard and is a sort of window into the soul of the paper. What are the preoccupations and predilections of the readers? What is their typical tone of voice? And in terms of the solidly right-of-centre Daily Telegraph in the UK, are all its readers situated in Dorking, Surrey? And are they all retired colonels? Well, no. But we chose The Telegraph because it's the funniest letters pages and the most likeable. Generally, a world away from the shouty nastiness of the online comments board on newspapers' websites. We asked Telegraph Letters Supremo Christopher House to come in and talk us through the letters page.
Now, one topic which interests readers is how you should pronounce www, that thing that you get on websites. Anthony Bainbridge from Godford in Wiltshire writes in saying, Wee Willy Winky. More syllables, but quicker. Kate Graham Cook writes from Launceston in Dorset. My mother calls it that www dot thing. Apt rather than easy. But I think probably the best solution is from Reverend Roger Holmes from York, who writes in saying, how about abbreviating www to World Wide Web? Very good. Sharp, that. And then the other thing is that people are quite good at noticing behaviour in public places and in shops. Here's a letter from Andrew Tooby from Ombersley in Worcestershire. Since when, he writes, did are you all right there come to mean can I help you?
They are very good.
And here's something that somebody's noticed. There's been quite a lot of coverage of some particular television programme in The Telegraph. Susan Bonus of Yelling in Cambridgeshire wrote in to say, I challenge you to produce just one edition of The Daily Telegraph which doesn't mention Downton Abbey.
Christopher, thanks very much for joining us. This is an amusing topic. I've been looking forward to talking to you about letters, specific letters to The Telegraph. I think in British newspapers, The Telegraph is famous for having the most lively, amusing, engaged and whimsical
letters
page.
There's huge competition amongst readers to get one of their letters in. We get hundreds every day.
Yeah.
And of course, they don't come through the post mostly now. They used to once upon a time, some of them in green ink, but those days are gone and they all bob along happily on the email, which means there's a very rapid response to what's going on in the so-called real world.
It's an interesting thing for me, the letters page of the newspaper, despite the fact that many of them get sent in by email rather than by the post, they're very different to the comments section of the telegraph.co.uk, and letters to the editor generally have a different muscularity, a different quality to them than the comments board, which is sort of like the home of the troll almost.
Well, perhaps so, yes. I think online comments are very often a 2 a.m. feeling of hangover and darkness and rain. Whereas the letters that appear on the page, they're thought about. You can feel that somebody's been sucking their pencil before they've tapped it out on their keyboard. And it is astonishing. Some people actually write every day. I mean, I do tell them that we you know, wouldn't put them in every day. There's a rule of thumb that nobody should appear more than once a month.
And do you have, I mean, I was going to ask you about that. I'm sure you have people that like the repartee, if such a thing actually exists between you and the writers in. You can't possibly give a response to everybody, but presumably the better ones, especially if they go in, you get a bit of a relationship with some of your readers.
I think they like to think so. And indeed, there is one there. They feel that it's their territory, their patch, their part of the family, if you like. And I do get to know the people who are very regular and... They also make a conversation which continues over several days and sometimes snowballs. And it's astonishing what they know. They suddenly find out something which had never occurred to you. So when this royal baby was born the other day, somebody wrote a letter about its initials, which is CEDW. And Martin Mayer from Lancashire wrote in to say CEDW, which I think is pronounced Kedw, is the Welsh for mustard. May she enhance the flavour of our lives for many years to come, he says. Well, I don't know that the royal family considered that, not even the Prince of Wales.
Exactly, so she's kind of bought into the Welshness, the perceived Welshness of the family line.
Well, perhaps
accidentally.
So, but, yeah, but not, it's nothing that anybody else had noticed.
I love that. See, and this is the fantastic whimsical nature of some of these letters. Have letters to the editor made the staff of the Telegraph delve into some of these matters of moment and consequence?
Well, I tell you what happened the other day is that we got a lovely letter, just three sentences from a woman about a teddy bear that she had given to her husband, who was a pilot during the Second World War, a bomber pilot, who went on 50 missions to Germany. And he came back. He was a Mosquito night fighter. He flew 50 operations. And she says in her letter about her husband and the bear, together they won the DFC, which is a gallantry award. And just in her last sentence, she says, "We were married for 50 years, but now, sadly, I just have the bear." And that sparked a huge following on Twitter, actually, because we tweeted it. Mm. And it was retweeted hundreds of times. And a lot of people said it brought a tear to their eye. So what happened is that one of our reporters went to meet Mrs. Mellows, Jean Mellows, who lives in Dorking in Surrey, which is the sort of place that Telegraph is
quite
often...
Quite a rich, right,
well,
rich pickings in Dorking.
It's leafy, it's pleasant, yes. And it turns out that her late husband was quite a man. It's a good job he survived the war, because he then went on to get a silver medal in Olympic rowing and was a pillar of the local community. But it's that sort of thing that gives rise to human interest features, human interest stories.
You've found a moment of quiet and poignancy in that letter from Jean Mellows there. And as you say, there are a lot of these letters are heated. They involve politics. They involve big, serious issues. And people are unashamed to be serious about them. But do you have anything that is, maybe we are delving into your "I couldn't help noticing," or "Is it just me?" Is it just me? Is that what it's called?
No.
Am I missing something?
It could be called "Is it just me?" Yeah. But there's another volume.
I'm seeing a man sucking his pencil, a correspondent scratching his head at the same time as chewing his pencil.
Actually, we got a letter today, which will be in tomorrow's paper, which somebody was just commenting on the remark by Alex Salmond, the Scottish nationalist leader, who said that the Scottish lion has roared. And this reader from Bolton in Lancashire says, "I'm more than happy for the Scottish lion to roar as much as it wants, as long as it pays for its own cat food."
This is precisely the sort of epigrammatical quality that we were talking about, which we sort of expect. Presumably you get a swathe of letters on certain subjects. So a lot of people might have picked up on this, the Scottish lion roaring comment that Alex Salmond made, for example. Mm. And you have to choose the best. Presumably you get to perhaps put in the Christmas book, you get to put in the ones that were maybe too off-colour to be printed.
Or we would have loved to have printed them, but there simply isn't room, because we do get hundreds every day. We shovel through them, we read each one and take them into account, but there's only room for about 20 on the page each day. And I think that's part of it. You know, this very fashionable word, curating. This is what happens to these letters. They get curated. They're put on a display and they have a certain internal reference to each other. So it all looks marvellous on the plate, you know.
Yes.
Bits of celery and things at the end, grapes.
And how does the letters page, editing that page, choosing the letters, corresponding with the correspondence, how is that viewed at the Telegraph? Is that still an important part of the fabric of why people buy the physical paper product?
It works just as well online as it does on paper. But, I mean, we still have hundreds of thousands of people who read the paper on paper, and I can imagine it, you know, going through the letterbox in the countryside somewhere and landing on the doormat next to the Labrador, and the first thing that the householder does is pick it up and turn to the letters page, or possibly the obituaries, to see whether they're still alive. And once they've satisfied themselves, then they settle down with a cup of tea and the letters. And I think it helps them begin the day on a cheerful note.
That was Christopher Howes of the Daily Telegraph talking letters to the editor. We turn now to our Hong Kong bureau chief, Aisha Spears, who's just returned from a trip to Saigon where she met the city's last remaining professional letter writer.
A couple of weekends ago, I was walking through the confusing streets of hot and sticky Ho Chi Minh City on a mission. Having visited the remarkable and eerie Reunification Palace, the only other main spot I had to make it to on my short trip was the city's historic post office. Designed by Gustave Eiffel and constructed in the 1880s, it wasn't just the building's intricate French colonial architecture I was after. I wanted to meet a man there. His name is Dong Van Ngo. He's in his 80s, and he's the city's last remaining professional letter writer. Before the ease of email communication, the ability to translate words with an app on our phones, and the immediate long-distance relationships cultivated by social media, we had letter writers like Mr. Dong. They wrote and translated everything from formal legal documents to longing love letters. Often skilled in many languages, they helped people who were perhaps caught between cultures to form and develop relationships. In a city with as complex and international a history as Saigon, Mr. Dong surely had some good stories to tell. The romance of receiving a letter is undeniable. Getting something handwritten, stamped, and sealed in the post can make someone feel immediately special. Professional letter writers thrived during times when literacy rates were lower. During the 1950s here in Hong Kong, they were all over the city. Today, there's reportedly only one left, occupying a street corner in Kwun Tong in Kowloon. Working in a script as complex as traditional Chinese, Hong Kong's letter writers were not only conveying meaning with their words, but also their choice of symbols. Well educated and skilled, these professionals have today been forsaken for the predictive text on smartphones. But while literacy rates may be higher today than they were during the 1950s, the skills needed to write a good letter could be even worse. How many of us today is proud of our handwriting? With everything from daily correspondence to crosswords done on computers, tablets, and phones, it's a rarity to have to put pen to paper. And even if we can still manage to keep things neat and joined up, we're accustomed to being able to write, delete, change, and rephrase everything with ease, making formulating our thoughts coherently by hand a bit of a challenge. Back in Ho Chi Minh City, I never managed to make my date with Mr. Dong. Reportedly having never missed a day of work in the 60-plus years he's been working at the post office, it must have been me that missed him. It's a shame, because while I type these thoughts out on my convenient and efficient laptop, deleting and retyping phrases that don't work, I know that I would have loved to have met someone who has the ability to write perfect words in perfect sentences onto an actual piece of paper. For Monocle, in Hong Kong, I'm Aisha Spears.
Thanks, Aisha. After the break, we'll be entertained by Letters Live, the company that turns letters into performance.
As the diplomatic wrangle over the Arctic continues, Monocle's Toronto bureau chief Thomas Lewis travelled to the Arctic Council's meeting in northern Canada to assess, on film, the path ahead for this strategically important area.
The Arctic Council is often held up as an example of how an international diplomatic body should operate. It has a strong track record of resolving territorial disputes peacefully and dealing with the shifting Arctic landscape in all its forms through measured negotiation.
Circle of Friends, the art of Arctic diplomacy, a Monocle movie, now premiering in the film section of monocle.com.
You're listening to Culture on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Bounds. We're going now to hear from writer Simon Garfield. His book, To the Letter, celebrates written correspondence as a way to track our histories, from ancient Roman abbreviations to lessons in writing by Lewis Carroll. The book explores the stories letters can tell that other media simply can't. Here's Simon.
Pretty much we were writing and have written the same kind of things over the centuries. So, I mean, the letters that work best over time are obviously the ones that still resonate with us now. I wasn't interested in kind of business letters and formal things. I was interested very much in kind of personal communication and the bearing of the heart and the soul. You know, we have the same emotions. That's what I found so interesting, pretty much sort of all the way along, and we're sort of, you know, we're honest with each other for that amount of time. But also that was my fear really with emails, is that we don't tend, I mean, even before, you know, Edward Snowden and the fact that everything seems to be being read by everyone else, it's sort of clear that we simply don't trust emails to commit our kind of deepest emotions to, by and large. And so that's something that I think we're going to miss as well.
So do you think that that's the thing that letters convey? That's what they can tell us about history that other media can't?
Yeah, I think so. It's the detail that I love. But I think the nicest sequence of letters in my book, which actually we then edited into a book of its own, are these wonderful letters between a soldier called Chris Barker in the Second World War, writing to someone he hardly knew in England during the Blitz in 1943 onwards, and they fall in love through the post, and you know, it's a very happy ending. But it's that kind of emotional commitment and way to write about yourself in a way that really no other medium can handle. I mean, you kind of, you know, I love all forms of digital tech. I kind of think it's all great, but what are we going to have left? You know, what are biographers and historians actually going to use in 50 years' time or 100 years' time to show how we really lived? In a way, there'll be a lot more sort of backed up information, but it'll be mostly behind firewalls and passwords and, you know, on clouds that we may not be able to access. We're not always say, you know, I always say we're not going to discover love emails in the attic. But I think even more than that, really, is that emails, I think, are very much a passing phase. I mean, you know, you only have to look at how teenagers communicate, and emails are just too much of an effort. It's all obviously Snapchat and WhatsApp and all the others. And you know, that sort of stuff really isn't going to be archived. And if it is, I think we'll be really sort of disappointed by what it says as well.
Do you think then maybe in the future there'll be, well, future historians will have to sort of turn to images rather than the written word to decipher history?
Yeah, there will be a lot of that. But again, you know, I don't know. I mean, if, you know, if you think about the sort of films that you record, you know, with your friends on holiday and all of that, I mean, it's mostly people, tell me if I'm wrong, mostly people marking about, you know. I mean, it's there is obviously a lot more archive footage. But is it, again, you know, so the question is it people really thinking and writing about their lives in any depth?
Just finally, Simon, do you think then that there might be a time where we're not sending letters at all anymore? Or do you think they'll always exist?
Well, I mean, you know, there is obviously, thank goodness, a bit of a revival, and it's a bit kind of retro in a way. It's a bit like vinyl. You kind of think it's great to have it. People realise the value. It costs more, again, like vinyl, but if you've got the money, then it's a lovely thing to have. But ultimately, the choice will be taken out of our hands. So now we can send a letter and it costs, you know, 65 pence or a dollar or whatever it'll be. And you kind of think, okay, that's fine. But actually, you look at Canada and they've announced, for instance, that within 5 years, they will stop delivering personal mail to people's homes. And you will have to pick up or whatever's left from, you know, supermarkets or corner shops or whatever. The infrastructure is really falling to pieces.
That was Simon Garfield, and his book To the Letter is out now, published by Gotham Books. Now, how do you make letters relevant for a whole new audience? An audience that, frankly, they were never meant to have. Well, you perform them. Letters Live is just what it sounds like, really. A platform that appears at cultural events all over the place, that revels in the quality, poignancy and comedy value of letters written by the famous, the infamous and the unknown, but all chosen for their quality. Julien Plante is the founder of Letters Live, but first, we'll hear an excerpt. This is Benedict Cumberbatch reading from Letters by Alan Turing.
Dear Mrs. Morecambe, I want to say how sorry I am about Chris. During the last year, I worked with him continually, and I am sure I could not have found anywhere another companion so brilliant and yet so charming and unconceited. I regarded my interest in my work and in such things as astronomy, to which he introduced me, as something to be shared with him, and I think he felt a little the same about me. Although that interest is partly gone, I know I must put as much energy, if not as much interest, into my work as if he were alive, because that is what he would like me to do. I feel sure that you could not possibly have had a greater loss. Yours sincerely, Alan Turing.
Letters Live is a celebration of letter writing and the lost art of correspondence. The idea comes from a publisher at the beginning, publisher Canongate, and Jamie Bing, who is the man at the head of this independent publishing company, together with the author of Letters of Note, Sean Usher, and Simon Garfield as well, the author of To the Letter. And together they had this idea of celebrating letter writing. It was around the time of the publication of this book called Letters of Note. And they had this idea of doing an event, asking famous people or not, reading out letters in front of an audience. So it's not the first time, but what was so special about it is the first compilation of letters, because there was everything in the program, love letters and sad letters and letters from jail and every type of letter. And I think that's the power of Letters Live, is that we can feel a mix of emotions throughout the night.
And you really go on a journey, don't you? I mean, Letters of Note, people might be familiar with that, Sean Usher's great book, which features all these letters from the great and the good and some unknown people as well. But it seems to be that idea that you are boring into someone's personal life. There is a personal truth offered by letters that aren't offered by fiction or even non-fiction. There is something special and extra personal about them.
It's a journey. It's the shortest journey from one person. I mean, the thing about Letters Live is the fact that these correspondences are not supposed to be read out live. They are supposed to be from one person to the other. And we take it live. So in a way, we reveal that very intimate thing, that when you send out something in a letter, you know what you send out, but you don't know what the other person is going to receive, how it's going to be perceived. And that's the interesting thing in the letter. I think it's first the short format, and then that kind of surprise from both, from the person who writes it, but also from the person who received the letter.
I feel certain that I am going mad again. I feel we can't go through another of those terrible times. And I shan't recover this time. I begin to hear voices, and I can't concentrate. So I am doing what seems the best thing to do. You have given me the greatest possible happiness. You have been in every way all that anyone could be. I don't think two people could have been happier till this terrible disease came.
There's that interesting idea of exchange, and letter writing is different to writing fiction or even non-fiction. You know your audience because it's an audience of one, and you obviously know their name and address, and you probably know how they'll respond to the words you write and the emotions, the story you tell in that one single sheet of white paper or wherever it might be. It's a very different thing to fiction in the sense that you can tell the ideas that you're going to bounce off another person, right? And I guess that, again, is that personal nature of it.
It's very personal, but saying that, the great letters, you can appreciate them even without the general context in which they have been written. And that, I think, is the power of those great letters selected by Sean for his book. Of course, they are from famous people, so it's great to read a letter by, say, Winston Churchill or John Lennon. But I think they also have a true quality of excellent writing. Sometimes it can be very short, but what's good is when you can appreciate a letter without necessarily having the context in which they've been written.
I suppose that is the thing. I suppose it can exist. We're familiar maybe with people's tones of voice, or if we know that a letter is from Churchill, for example, we can imagine him dictating it or writing it or whatever it might be. I suppose we are offered an image of being an intimate guest in somebody else's world for the duration of that letter. Do you, in putting together Letters Live and your work with Sean Usher on this, have you seen a difference between people's public and private tones of voice with Churchill or Lennon, as you said, or Picasso or Castro? Have you noticed the difference between their public declarations and their private thoughts?
Yes, I think there is a certain element of performance in Letters Live. The fact that we ask primarily actors to perform, reading out those letters is a performance. It's a relatively easy one that doesn't need much rehearsal. That's why I think we've got actually very good response from the artist we invite to perform at Letters Live, because it's an easy one, basically. They are in good company and it's for a good cause, because we do support literacy charities within it. But I think there is that element of performance, and some actors actually do love to impersonate.
Do the voices, you mean?
Do the voices. like
Which never hurts, does it? It's always nice to have a little bit of a light element at a literary festival.
Yes, yes, exactly. I mean, and that's why, I mean, Benedict is so good at it. Benedict Cumberbatch, when he reads Kurt Cobain, you really feel like you have the man, the icon, and the legend in front of you. So there is this element. We also had, as another example, to stay in music, we also had this young actress called Ellie Bamber, and she read that great letter by Janis Joplin that she wrote age 24 to her parents. And it's such an innocent, lovely letter that was written when she was at the top of her, but she was not, I mean, of course, it's very sad with everything that happened to her, and she died, she was very young, and to have this young actress being Janis Joplin in front of that audience was quite something. I mean, it's one of many examples. I mean, in total, we had, like, for the last series of events, we had nearly 50 artists reading about 100 letters. So it's one of many examples, but that's the thing. When the actors are able to impersonate, then you've got something unique and very special.
Thanks, Julian. That was Julian Planté, the founder of Letters Live, coming to a festival near you soon. So who does still write letters? You and me, dear listeners. It's a dying art, but it has its propagators, its would-be saviours, its fans. Letters to the editor are the civilised side of what is now the Twittersphere. Letters Live is a transformative, performative thing, and in Saigon, it's a job. If you want to keep the dream alive, put pen to paper and make someone's day. After all, when can you lick the back of a Facebook status update? Don't answer that one. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was Holly Fisher of St Neots, Cambridgeshire. Join us again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds. Thanks for tuning in.